Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is the founding partner of CBAO Strategies, one of America's great pollsters, Jim Gerstein, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. We'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell your friends about us. Remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Naked Wines and Green Chef, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. Our guest is one of America's preeminent pollsters, a friend of this podcast, Democrat Jim Gerstein. Jim, ever since the last presidential elections, Democrats have been really gloomy. Looking at Tuesday's blowout for Democrats across the country, New Jersey, New York, California, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, it's awful hard to be gloomy. Happy days may be here again is the chorus. Jim, did you expect a sweep of this magnitude, and what does it mean?
Well, first, thanks, Al. Great to see you guys. Most of the people in my world were not surprised by the fact that we won these elections. I think the magnitude of the victory, the size of the victory, was a little bit larger than many of us expected. We did think that this has all the markings right now of a blue wave, all the indicators that you would see in the odd year leading into the midterms are good. And we had all these special elections in 2025 that we were outperforming in 2024 by 10, 15 points, big races too, like the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race. So this wasn't a surprise, but it really feels good. And we've needed this, and I'm hoping that this puts a bookend on the chapter of Democrats beating up on Democrats over how bad we are, because I think so much of that was driven by the bad feeling of losing that 2024 presidential election, and now we are back to winning elections, and I think that's probably the best thing that we could do for a morale boost and regain some of that energy that Democrats need to.
Boy, it's a different tone and tune today. But, you know, and Virginia Spanberger, as you say, was expected to win, but she even carried the attorney general candidate in with her, despite his sexting scandal. I thought he was probably dead. The great Speaker of the House there noted there were seven or eight, I forget which, Republican seats that Harris carried. And he said, we're going to win them all. Well, he did. And he won about seven more. I mean, they picked up, I think, as many as 13 seats in the state legislature. They have like a 63-37 majority now. Counties like Chesterfield or Richmond suburb, which Glenn Youngkin carried 4 years ago, Spanberger not only won, she won it, you know, in a rout. And good candidates obviously matter. And she was a good candidate. I assume those assembly candidates were. But wasn't anti-Trump a key element in Virginia as well as elsewhere?
For sure. Look, I think there is a common thread between these victories across the country. And let's make no mistake. I mean, this is a sweeping, massive victory all over the country. And the common line across all of it is primarily the cost of living and how hard it is for people to keep up with costs. We see this in every focus group. It's in every poll. People really have trouble keeping up with the cost of living, and they see a president and a Republican Congress that is doing nothing to address the cost of living. If anything, they're seen as making it worse, whether it's cutting Medicaid, whether it's the big, beautiful bill that gives tax cuts to billionaires and makes it harder for working people. There's just a range of things that tie together with the opposition to Trump. Of course, in Virginia, it was a big deal, but it also was a big deal in New Jersey.
Because well, yeah, it was. I mean,
governor there tied himself to Trump.
Totally. I mean, Jack Cittarelli was a Trump clone more than he was 4 years before. And, you know, New Jersey is supposed to be close. And I heard, you know, people say Cheryl wasn't a great candidate. I've known her for 7 years. I think she's terrific. I certainly didn't expect a win like that, but she is an enormously impressive young Democratic politician. She not only won in a landslide, like her good friend Spamberger, she helped Democrats in state legislative races. And as you say, when Cittarelli tied himself to Trump, that was just a massive miscalculation.
Yeah, I mean, he is failing to address the biggest problem in people's lives, and that is the how much things cost. And they don't like they don't like the way he's doing things. They don't like what he's doing. And Democrats are finally, voters are finally having a chance to speak out and release that energy they have against him.
Well, you know, New York City was a really impressive win by Mondami. He is a terrific communicator. He's a socialist, and while his solutions are different, he really defined the problems very similarly to what Spamberger and Cheryl were saying: affordability, cost of living, health care, housing, groceries. So I think there's a similarity there, even though there are great divisions on the solutions. Republicans are going to try to make him a socialist, the future of the Democratic Party. That is BS. I'm going to say it nicely for you, Jim. You know, James and I could tell you the last mayor from New York City to achieve any higher office was the immortal John Hoffman in 1869. I did not cover that race, Jim. I mean, it's just it'll be a great Republican talking point. But I think our friend Susan Swecker said those two women governors are the face of the Democratic Party today.
No, I mean, if you watch Fox News last night, you know what their assessment of the election was? Well, of course, Democrats were going to win in Virginia and New Jersey. Yeah, that was their first thing. Second, the polls were all wrong. Of course, it was the Republican polls that were wrong. And third, it was Mamdani's a socialist. So obviously, that's what the Republicans are going to try and hang their hats on. But the reality is, the lessons that come out of this election that apply to the midterms are rooted in the New Jersey, Virginia races. The most important thing that happened last night, if you're looking to 2026, is we essentially picked up five congressional seats last night because of the referendum in California. Not that is the single most important outcome as you look forward to 2026. In terms of what happened last night, but in terms of lessons learned and where things are going, I think we look at the range of things from Virginia, New Jersey, Mississippi. We picked up two state rep seats that I'm sure James is aware.
The state senate, yeah, they lost a supermajority in a state senate. And in Minnesota, the Democrats now control the state senate, which they didn't before. Minnesota's not as blue as people think.
And two public utility posts in Georgia. Just one thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to James. You know, just about Fox, it was the Fox poll that came closest to showing how big Cheryl would win in New Jersey. So I'm sorry the Fox anchors didn't have a chance to look at their own poll. James Carville.
So, Jim, I like to play little games here. So you're the pollster, and any of us jump in and out if you want with your views as well as discussion. We have a Republican incumbent is a +5 R district. And they call us in to have a meeting. How do we handle the Trump issue? How do we handle this? Do we break from Trump? But you know, and somebody says, well, if you do that, you're going to get primaried. The guy right primary you. He had 63% of the Republicans in this district want you to stick with Trump. Blah, blah. How would you middle this? Just off the top of your head.
I think the Republicans, they have a problem on their hands. They've got a president with low job approval, dragging them down, who they're afraid to break from. So they have, for all the problems people like to talk about, the Democrats, I mean, the Republicans have a major problem on their hands on how to exactly play out what the challenge that you're presenting to their consulting team. I think that, and as you know, when you're facing a wave, it's really hard to do anything. And I think for them, it's really, they're going to have to do some triage. I mean, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but every indicator is good. I think if I were a Republican consultant, which I'm glad I'm not, I would say that they need to find a way to break from Trump without him them primarying them. And I don't even know how much that's going to do. But they're going to want to really localize their races. I don't know how well they're going to do that. I like our hand today more than certainly more than I did going into 2024. And I like our hand today a lot more than they should like their hand.
Okay, so let's say that you walk across the hall and it's a Democratic senator and you called in. And they say, look, people are going to go hungry and we can visit some of this stuff later. Let's give a short through Thanksgiving extension without getting the health care subsidies. And we can negotiate and we can come back and revisit this. But right now, the most important thing to do is, and we have people in food banks. We have people in food lines. There's real food insecurity in the United States. And I need your advice on whether I should vote through December 1st to fund the government. Then we can revisit it.
Look, if we want to look at this through the political lens,
that's what we're looking at. You're a poster. We're asking for your political advice.
I think
just so you know, a nutrition expert have come in before you and say this: people are going to food banks. They're running short. People are trying to donate. We're going to cause people to be hungry. And all I'm saying, should we extend to December 1st?
Right. I think, from a political perspective,
that's what we asked you. You're the poster.
This is the first opportunity that Democrats have had since the election to show people what they really stand for and what they're fighting for. And every indication is that this is the public is on the Democrat side. The public, it goes back to the cost of living, and what the Democrats are outlining here or fighting for here is to prevent a massive increase in the cost of health insurance. They're trying to restore Medicaid cuts, and backing down from that position makes no sense to me politically. I think, yeah, that they have Democrats have a winning hand here. People know that the Republicans are in charge. Republicans are the ones that are shutting down this government because they won't address the cost of living. And to the senator, I would say, you know, you're choosing yet no good choices under Donald Trump. People are going to be hungry. Or they're going to lose, or their health insurance is going to skyrocket. Well, let's be on the side of the working people who we need to help keep that cost of living down for them. And it seems obvious to me politically.
Yeah, I would add, Senator, if you do that, you may very well get primary.
Okay. If you what?
I mean, there's no Democratic appetite to give him anything remotely what they want. And that has really changed since today.
Exactly. Okay. James, let me just say one more thing. Democrats' favorability is going up with Democrats.
Of course.
And they've been depressed with Democrats, but they didn't have an opportunity to fight.
And your Republicans had 88% favor view of their party. Democrats had 41% favor view of their party because we lost. And I don't like, it goes much, much, much deeper than that.
Yes.
The Democrats will probably be starting to get another look. Wasserman texted me last night and said that Hispanic shift in New Jersey was just mind-boggling. Okay, now people are rushing comment. As the Hispanics are now, we didn't realize how Democratic they were. I don't think they're that Democratic. I think. What are you going to recommend that Democrats do between now and the midterms to solidify Hispanic vote and make some inroads into small town and rural America? I mean, which we sorely need. We don't, these problems, we rented the Hispanics for an election cycle. We don't own them at all. Mm-hmm. And I looked through some of the results in Virginia, rural Virginia. They were a little better, but they were still bad. I mean, Fairfax, and you couldn't. Now, City of Alexandria was 87%.
I think we know that the Hispanic vote is persuadable in both directions. And what you're asking, what should we be doing? Right now, we see that it is persuading back towards the Democrats. And I would continue, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but I went to the James Carville School of Communications, and that it's the cost of living. And we continue demonstrating to reduce the cost of living for people. And you go back to the shutdown. This is what we are fighting for in this shutdown. I think that is very helpful for winning the Hispanic vote, as well as the vote across the electorate.
Jim, just a quick, to pick up on James, then I'll turn right back to James. Passaic County, New Jersey has the largest Latino percentage of any county in New Jersey. Trump carried it in 2024. She won it by more than 15 yesterday. So that says a lot. Anyway, James.
I'll tack on one thing of that. Texas, they rewrote this whole redistricting thing is instigated by Texas, right?
Right.
Where they thought that they were going to pick up 5 seats through their remap. They might, but they're banking on a Hispanic vote there that is no longer what they were banking on a Hispanic vote looking like it did in 2024.
Right.
And it is not likely to be to look that way. They may only be getting 3 seats instead of 5 seats out of that redistrict, whereas in California, we're going to net 5 seats most likely.
So this is going to be a big argument, and this is going to be, this show, I'm sure, is going to delve into this. There have been really exhaustive analytics done after 2024 election. One of them been done, American Bridge, which was headed up by Mitch Landrieu, which focused on working class voters. Another was broader, and it's really deep, by a guy named Brazelton. He was one of the 3 people I've looked at. It was really good. It was rich in detail. And the conclusion is the same, that we were really hurt by identity politics. There's no doubt about that. It's been pointed out that Rubin and Alyssa Slotkin and Jackie Rosen and Tammy Baldwin ran 2.5 points ahead of Harris, and Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren actually ran 2.5 points behind him. And now you have the election of Madani. So there's 2 schools of thought. There's the Ezra Klein school, who I think should never be dismissed, that the Democrats need to have big tent politics. There's a growing school of people that say, why don't you just call yourself a democratic socialist and not a Democrat? Because the baggage you bring to the election may not be worth the votes you have. That argument is coming.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be stopped. And, it's coming more now. And I think now I want him to succeed. There's 8 million people. He's in, he's keeping, everybody's, well, maybe the guy gets in there, we'll see. But do you have a view on that argument?
Yeah, I think any candidate, the identity politics doesn't work, and especially in these swing, in the places that are going to make the difference in the majority, and the candidates need to be, I think they should just get out of the political argument and focus on what they are delivering for their voters, and it doesn't have to, they don't need to invoke any of that. I just don't see the advantage to it. And but of course, they need to do what they need to get to 50% plus one. And that is being an advocate for their voters or their constituents in a period in which they're struggling and they're dying. They're hungry for somebody who gets them and somebody who's going to speak for them.
So what people will tell me is, James, look, you've won this fight. We don't, AOC has scrubbed her site of all pronouns. They just don't talk about it anymore. Let it go. And I guess I'm not, I'll just give you my view and turn it over to Al. I'm not sure these people are worth the trouble. I know that they've taken their pronouns down. I know that we don't talk about transition surgery for prisoners or anything like that. But maybe we need to just affirmatively attack it. I don't know. We'll have other shows. You're a pollster. You got more coalitions. I'm a provocateur. I got to provoke arguments here, but we'll see. Albert?
I think that, Jim, you know, you raised a really good point about the redistricting. I think just a couple months ago, it looked like, and I heard analysts say that Republicans are going to pick up, you know, as many as a dozen net seats. That is starting to crumble. You noted Texas beat California. But the Democrats are going to gerrymander in other places now. Virginia, top of the list, Maryland. And in some Republican states, they're balking. Kansas and in Missouri, they may face a referendum. They've done it. But I think that referendum would lose. And Jim, you know this better than anyone. I think the best model may have been what happened in the General Assembly in Virginia yesterday, and to some extent New Jersey, where they far exceeded expectations in picking up those local seats. And I would guess as of today, off-the-wall Democrats are poised to win anywhere between 10 and 30 seats next year in the midterms. Does that seem crazy to you?
I think that unless the Supreme Court redraws the map of the South, which is a big concern, or allows them to eliminate numerous black representation in the House of Representatives. That is a concern, but you take that out, I think we are poised on, you know, we have the possibility of a wave election here. And I think 10 to 30, sure. If I were betting on this, the Democrats have the advantage to win the House. And I think the Senate is in play.
It is.
I think last night showed us that the electorate in 2025 was much different than the electorate in 2024. And I suspect 2026 is going to look a lot more Democratic. Just the composition of the electorate is going to be much more Democratic than it was in 2024. And we have some really good candidates running in some tough states. But I think this is very doable.
Well, sometimes things occur that people don't fully appreciate at the time. One of those was yesterday in Pennsylvania, the state Supreme Court retention. Those state Supreme Courts have played a huge role in redistricting to the Democrats' huge detriment in North Carolina and Ohio, but to their advantage in Pennsylvania. And what that vote in Pennsylvania yesterday did, and Josh Shapiro deserves lots of credit for it, that virtually assured that the Democrats will control the state Supreme Court for the foreseeable future. So that was a really important victory that really was under the radar, Jim.
Sure was. And again, I want to remind people that we won big state Supreme Court race in Wisconsin earlier this year by 10 points.
Yeah, right.
In a state that was a toss-up state. These are critical elections, and we've been doing very, very well this year. And I think it should give us hope to be on offense going into the next year.
Well, I gave Shapiro credit a moment ago, and he certainly deserves it. Gavin Newsom deserves huge credit. It looks, they won 64-36 or something. When that began, there was great concern that maybe this was a mistake. And Newsom maneuvered, bullied, persuaded his way through, and did just an extraordinary job. And that was, as you say, if they had lost that referendum yesterday, I think our feelings about the House might be different.
So, Jim, that's your favorite cocktail party thing, to talk about something that no one else has talked about in the election that might have been unnoticed, that signals something. In Bucks County, Pennsylvania, every school board member that run on this anti-trans shit was ousted. All right? And we better not forget that, because when they start their stuff, maybe we should start back. But I thought that was interesting. And, you know, as you know, in 2024, Bucks is usually the swing county and the swing state, and it swings so much, or put it in your backyard. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I thought that was something that could have ramifications going forward. I really do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the other, you know, certainly people who deserve credit. I'll tell you, one thing we learned the final weekend was Barack Obama has not lost his magic. I mean, those campaign rallies in New Jersey and Virginia, which I actually watched most of them, were electric. And I think, you know, I don't know that it affected many votes at the end. But, you know, if I'm running anywhere in the country, I think I wouldn't mind having the former president come in and give me a helping hand.
There's one former. There's a couple former presidents I'd want, and there's one that I wouldn't want.
And maybe a former vice president, too. But in any event, no, it was good. I it's awful hard to find any bad news. James's Bucks County observation is really important. That is such a swing district. They got a Republican congressman there who survived everything. He's enormously popular, but I'd worry a little bit if I were him. And James, you mentioned to me, I guess last night, in Georgia, they won two public utilities.
They didn't win.
I mean, 63%. Yeah. And that's that also is a harbinger of an issue that's going to potentially advantage Democrats. James, you want to pick up on that?
I do have one final question. Jim, I know this issue, but you know it better than anybody in the world. In Israel, talk about it just a second, Hasidim, the ultra-Orthodox, have been exempt from serving in the military, which has been a sticky issue for a long time. Let's just leave it at that. And the Supreme Court has now said they must serve. How much, give us how Bibi's coalition, just a brief thing about Bibi's coalition, and does this put his coalition in danger?
Yeah, it's a great question. His coalition's been in danger ever since October 7th, and he manages to keep that coalition together for no other reason than the people in the coalition who are able to bring it down have no incentive to bring it down because they will lose seats in the next election. Mm-hmm. So by law, the next election needs to be by October of 2026. That's getting closer and closer. Conventional wisdom in Israel is that there will be an election sometime between March and June, largely because of the issue that you're talking about, is that just the ultra-Orthodox parties are unable to, the tension between them and the need to pass a law as mandated by the Supreme Court that would require Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox service in the military, that pressure is building so much that it may force a coalition crisis, but this crisis has been there throughout most of his administration. That's just a long way of saying they've managed to put this off over and over again, legislative delays, legislative tactics, things that just drag it out. I'm in the camp that Netanyahu will do an election as late as possible because he's just hoping for something to change in the political dynamic there that could help him come back from the deep.
It's fair to say this accelerates. You can't legislate. You're going to have to do something sooner, not later.
True. It adds pressure. There's so many delaying tactics. This has been going on for so long. It just adds more pressure on the ability to keep the coalition together. It's not like there's a date now that they say this has to be done by this date. Otherwise, the government falls. It doesn't work that way.
Okay. Oh, man, I can't thank you enough.
Well, let's stay on Israel for a little bit, James, because we got more a real expert here. I mean, the other great schism with the ultra-Orthodox that played into it, an army intelligence chief was arrested because she leaked video of Israeli troops really molesting Palestinian prisoners. But what I found was the reaction. The ultra-Orthodox were outraged at her and saying she ought to be punished, and some of the rest of the country was outraged and thinks those troops ought to be. That just adds to the fissures over there, doesn't it, James? And tells us
it is such a divided, polarized society right now. There, everything is. This is a horrible story. What happened with the military advocate general? It was their version of an Abu Ghraib almost. What happened at this detention? And she did authorize the leaking of the footage, and then lied about it. And it just added fuel to the fire of the right left divide there, because on the right side of the ledger, we're outraged that this was out there and making soldiers look bad. On the left side of the ledger, it was, how are we allowing our military to conduct themselves this way? And it's an awful mess. She is now in detention. There was a suicide concern that about her because her car was parked on the beach and her cell phone was missing. And it just, all of this, it consumed the news until they found her. It's an awful situation on this issue.
You know, I hope this isn't true, but I read up yesterday, I think, the polls show BB bouncing back and even ahead. Tell me that's not true, will you please, Jim?
I can help you feel better. It is not true.
Good.
What is so fascinating about what's going on in the electorate in Israel right now and in polling in Israel is Netanyahu has had a series of things that typically a prime minister would, the country would rally around the prime minister because of perceived success. The Iran war in Israel was seen as a big success.
Right.
And he got zero political bump out of it. Bringing home the hostages, finally, after 2 years in captivity, and getting a ceasefire, that was something that was overwhelmingly supported by the public, but Netanyahu got zero political bump out of it. At the end of the day, what you see is that the public in Israel is not forgiving Netanyahu and his coalition partners for the failure of October 7th. He's skated by, he's gotten past corruption scandals in the past, all the problems that people have with him. He's gotten past it because of his image on security. That image was really heavily damaged on October 7th, and he's the only person in a position of leadership who is still standing and hasn't taken responsibility and stepped down since then. So it's not even close right now in terms of public polls. The opposition bloc has about 70 seats in polling compared to 50 seats for the coalition bloc. The only question is, ultimately, will he be able to negotiate his way back into the government, depending on the outcome in which parties in the opposition bloc emerge?
So if he doesn't, there may be another place waiting for him, which isn't as comfortable as a government seat, a prison cell. One final question for me, and then James can wrap it up. I think Trump does deserve credit for helping end the war. He did what Biden foolishly refused to do. He stood up to Bibi. But Gaza is far from settled, Jim, and the two-state solution doesn't look any closer than it has for the last 10 years.
No, I mean, like, the first most important thing is that there's a ceasefire. The bombing, the killing, the death on both sides is hopefully over for now, and going to hold, and that those hostages are home. All those living hostages are home. Now there's, It is still a mess. You know, Hamas has not returned all of the remains of the dead hostages. This is a big sticking point in Israel. There is shooting against Israeli soldiers who are on the other side, on the correct side of the ceasefire lines. Some have died. There's still lingering things that are very problematic, very painful for both sides, because there's still been Palestinians dying as well in countermeasure. Whether or not this really holds and whether or not there's an advancement is going to depend on American and international leadership. And it's hard to bank on that for sure.
Pessimism usually plays in the, pays in the Middle East, I'm afraid. But James Carville, you want to?
So I guess, Jim, in the years that we've been in this, have been longer than you, but we've been doing it. I was friends since the late 90s. And when you know something and you forget something, you know, it really pisses you off. And I'd actually fallen into something I should have known better. And that is, Spanberger is going to win. I could see that she could win by as much as 10, but I think Cheryl could lose. And there's a law of political physics. You cannot win Virginia by 10 and lose New Jersey. It can't happen. You can't win Pennsylvania by 4 and lose Michigan. And God damn it, I fell into it. I started believing what, and by the way, the polling would confirm that there was going to be a differential. It was barely any differential. And I don't know of a single person that didn't fall into that trap, including me.
And me.
And I said, it's back to knife. If we can win Virginia by 10 and New Jersey by 5, that would be over. We won both by 14. We're old, we experienced, and we're stupid. Okay?
James, you know what we did? We didn't pay enough attention to the New Jersey Fox poll that showed Cheryl winning by close to.
We didn't, but we all, to a person, and I'd say, you know, it's political physics, but this time it may not be. It's gravity always is that. There's no exception to the rule. I just a general point to say, if you listen to this show and you think we know everything about politics, we don't. we fell into the oldest trap you could fall into, that it was going to be a huge differential. I think Virginia might be officially more blue than New Jersey. I don't know that, but there's not much difference.
Yeah, I'll take that competition. I think it's a good competition for us to have. Is to which one's more?
Yeah, they also they're
I'm
less populous.
Egg off my face.
Well, you know, but they're less populous, but they turn out more voters than New Jersey. I mean, it really is interesting.
I think the federal workers issue in Virginia is a big deal.
You're right. We had everything going for us. Yeah, but by the way, we won the attorney general's race. I'm personally going to find a convicted pedophile and run him in a race just to see if he could beat a Republican. I'm not sure. I'm not going to say that a convicted pedophile could win. And by the way, the guy that was running against him would ran a pretty good campaign and ran ads. And I mean, it just the most interesting thing, okay, drum roll, I'm going to give you all the most interesting piece of news of this cycle, even more interesting in Bucks County. The Republican legislator who released the text lost in J1.
Yeah.
I mean, just a little tidbit. Hey, you got some baggage out there with Trump people. Just know that.
Well, I'll tell you one place we don't have baggage is with our guest today, Jim. I mean, he was a twofer, a threefer, I don't know what, but you couldn't have a better guest after this seminal election. Jim Gerstein, thank you so much for being with us.
I'm a convicted pedophile.
Great to be with you guys.
Celebrate life with Nick and Warrens. It's better than great, and these people know what they're doing. They get wines that are not accessible to you, that you don't know about. They're extremely affordable. You know, in this era of affordability, which is kind of winning elections left and right, you can really work well with that.
Well, with the holidays fast approaching, nobody has time to waste getting stuck trying to buy wine at some store you don't really know, being paralyzed by limited options and high prices. Now we get exactly what we want and have ditched that store for good, all thanks to Naked Wines. This podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Now, if you haven't heard, Naked Wines is a wine club that directly connects you to the world's best independent winemakers, so you can get world-class wine delivered straight to your door. Plus, you can use our code WARROOM for the code and password at nakedwines.com and get $100 off your first order. That's 6 bottles for just $39.99. I'm going to repeat that because it's so unbelievable. 6 bottles for just $39.99, less than $7 a bottle. Now, whenever you show up with an amazing vintage from one of their unique and storied independent winemakers, you'll be an instant hit at dinners and holiday parties. By now, you know, we love wine, and there's nothing better than a nice glass after a long day with family or friends. Naked Wines has the perfect bottle for any moment at great prices. Their bottles instantly take any meal to the next level. And thanks to Naked Wines, you can enjoy a steak paired with a 2024 J.O.P. Malbec from Argentina. Argentina has really good wine. It'll be a dinner to remember. So how do they do it? Naked brings you amazing wine straight from the winery at up to 60% less than what you would pay in the store. By cutting out extra costs like middlemen markups, winemakers can pass those savings on to you without skimping on quality. They've been around for 15 years and back over 90 independent winemakers around the world to make the wine you love to drink. They put passion into every bottle and every glass is a true pleasure. Now is the time to join Naked Wines community. Head to nakedwines.com/warroom, click enter voucher, and put in your code warroom for both the code and password for $100 off your first order. That's six bottles for only $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off your first six bottles at nakedwines.com/warroom when you use the code and password warroom for six bottles of wine for $39.99. The link is in our show notes. Now for the outrage of the week. Dick Cheney, one of the most significant figures in American politics for a half a century, passed away. It's a complicated legacy. I first met him when he was President Ford's exceptionally able chief of staff. Then I got to know him, you know, fairly well as a congressman. Had dinners with him a couple of times. Mark Shields and I once took him to a college basketball game. He was a very devout but very principled conservative, smart, thoughtful. One of his closest colleagues was Tom Foley, who later became the Democratic Speaker of the House. Cheney went on to become Secretary of Defense under President George H.W. Bush, where they really did masterfully execute the first Gulf War, threw Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait, got the global community to support it, and then left. However, as President Bush's President Bush 43, as President George W. Bush's vice president, he was an architect of the disastrous Iraq War and some of the torture and renditions following 9/11. And that really is something that his legacy just simply cannot escape. He had a good final chapter standing up for the rule of law and against Trump and what his party has come to stand for, said he voted for Harris in 2024. But what I really remember is on January 6, 2022, the House honored the Capitol Police who risked a few lost their lives a year earlier to save off the violent mob trying to overturn a legitimate election. Almost all Republicans who profess to be the party of law and order outrageously stiffed those courageous cops, I guess fearing Trump's wrath. Only two showed up, the then Wyoming Congresswoman Liz Cheney and her dad. That was really, I think, a very nice finale to a long career.
Well, I mean, everything is personal. My wife is right now helping with the funeral arrangements. I've had several encounters because she would have to staff him, and we'd gone to Jackson Hole. Christmas, goddamn, it's cold out there. December in Jackson Hole. And he was always gracious to me, very hospitable. We avoided talking about politics. But in the end, you know, he stood by his oldest daughter. And people tend to forget his youngest daughter was a gay, and he was for gay marriage. And he just out and out said that. And so the man was, you could say a lot of things about him, but the one thing you can't say about him is he wasn't a devoted father. He was, totally, on every question. And I think that in itself is a legacy that is worth having. I guess my outrage is this. I want to have a conversation with Republicans. You have no idea of what's coming your way. Stand by. You made some really bad choices. You have some really bad leadership. The Epstein stuff is not going away, period. You are going to have to deal with it. The $50,000 in the carver bag is not going away. You're going to lose the congressional elections in 2026. And may I give you two names? One, Congressman Jamie Raskin, D, Maryland. I'll give you another name, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, D, Rhode Island. Whatever they got, you're going to get subpoenaed. And the relationship between some of these companies that are funding all of this, and there's going to be a massive, and there should be, understand, it's not, there should be all of these corporations, is a story, I'm just repeating what I saw in the paper, that the companies that are funding this gauche, whatever thing they do in, David Brooks in the Washington Post editorial, I saw Will Smith, the editor at the Barnett Service. I was polite, you know, don't do anything like that. But I said, man, I don't think you understand. You know, you're for Britain. We don't do Buckingham Palace here. That's just not, we have small R Republican values. I was very polite to him. All this is coming. It's coming. It's a giant freight train, and you can't stop it. You can't stop it. In all of these colluding corporations and universities and the corruption that just, they can't stop, the bags and Epstein and stuff that we can't even imagine, it's coming. And by the way, just, and there's a great, and I haven't read it, Cal Leoning book on just how serious that the raid was and television thing. And remember all of this, okay? Jack Smith will be called by Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. His report will be subpoenaed. It will be made public, and it will not be favorable at all. So just when you're trying to sleep at night, there's so much shit coming your way, you can't even imagine it. And I got news for you. You got no leadership. You got, Colbert, one of them, no, Seth Meyers did a thing of how many times Mike Johnson said, I don't know anything about that. I mean, literally, it was when he said, it just went on and on and on. The funniest goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life. But my message to you, Republicans, House members, it ain't looking good. It really is not looking good. And you know what? It's going to get worse. A lot worse.
James, just one thing. I think you were talking about the publisher of the Washington Post, because the editor, Matt Murray, has really done a good job. The Washington Post news coverage is really quite good. It's the editorial page.
I thought his news coverage was fine. It was nice to him. I mean, he was sitting on the stairs waiting to go through the security line. Yeah. But I don't even know what in these conservative comment, glad the New York Times has it. I don't have any problem with that. But they talk around everything but the fact that the President of the United States is a massive criminal. And you don't have to be a liberal, you don't have to be a conservative, you don't have to be moderate, anything like that. You should stand up to criminality on a scale like we have never seen. I think more was stolen. My personal view is more has been stolen since January 20th than from 1789 through 2024.
Oh, it's not even close, James. I'll give you what, 7-1. I don't know.
And they'll talk around it, and we don't like it, you know, whatever. And somebody ought to tell these people, Mr. Brooks and Brett Stevens and Ross, whatever. Man, we understand you're very talented men. Everything against you, but you look stupid, not addressing the massive, staggering, breathtaking criminality. It's amazing, and you just have to try this once, and you'll be blown away, because a lot of people, particularly our generation, remember frozen TV dinners, which are basically inedible. And what the advances they've made in prepared meals, that they're like AI advances, something on that level. And they're really affordable and really tasty, and they're really convenient.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, between the cold air and delicious flavors of autumn, it's the season of comfort food. It's also the perfect time to reset and kickstart healthy habits before you set your 2026 resolutions. Luckily, by choosing Green Chef, the number one meal kit for clean eating, you can do just that. So we have to ask, is there a better time to get started with easy meals and great nutrition from Green Chef than right now? Now, if you haven't heard, Green Chef makes it easy to spend less time in the kitchen and more time enjoying the fall. We're amazed that their new heat and eat meals are made so you can enjoy delicious, wholesome meals in just 3 minutes. It's perfect for supporting your wellness journey, and Green Chef recipes feature fresh, organic, seasonal produce with 100% responsibly sourced proteins to help you feel your best. Green Chef's real, clean ingredients help you build lasting, healthy habits without the hassle. You can even enjoy salads ready in just 5 minutes, protein-filled breakfast, or nutrient-rich smoothies to fuel your day. No matter your goals, Green Chef is ready to nurture your nutritional needs with 80-plus dietitian-approved weekly meal options. Green Chef makes it easy to find meals that fit your lifestyle. You can pick from Mediterranean, gluten-free, plant-based, protein-heavy, and even gut and brain health or calorie-smart choices also. You'll love how the recipes change every week with week-to-week flexibility, so you can adjust your plan to match your mood and your schedule and get the variety you crave. After switching to Green Chef, we have a great excuse to prepare food for friends and family. The chicken with garlic charred rice and apricot pan sauce is so good, it's like having your own personal chef delivered right to the door. So don't wait. Make this fall your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50warroom and use code 50warroom to get 50% off your first month. Then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50warroom at greenchef.com/50warroom. The link is also in our show notes.
Get back in the kitchen with Green Chef.
Hey, now for the questions from our well-informed listeners who really have been paying attention these last couple of weeks, even more than usual. John in Gurnee, Illinois. I got to go to Gurnee, Illinois and meet John because he writes every week and they're always good questions. James, he said, regardless of recent Democrat election wins, the Republicans are gathering huge campaign donations. Does this concern you, or will a Democratic money spigot start to flow now?
A Democrat has not lost an election in this century for a lack of money. They're not going to lose the next one for a lack of money. I'm telling you, and you're going to see, there was some reservation about the Democrats. There's not going to be those reservations. There's going to be tremendous enthusiasm in a lot of these companies that somehow or another thought this condition was permanent are going to be adjusting their strategies. I tell you who's going to make out like a bandit right now. If I were a Democratic lobbyist, my 2026 income is going to quadruple my 2025 income. Yes. That's for sure. I mean, believe you me, they hear the hoofprints now and they're going, oh shit, look, what did we do? And if there's anything, any impropriety, you better lawyer up, because these congressional committees got a pretty good idea what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Roger, I mean, that's why Trump is so desperate to try to fix Absolutely. The 2026 he's election. Terrible. And, you know, he will clearly try to pressure the Supreme Court to fix it further. But I don't think he's going to succeed short term there. Roger in Woodland Hills, California says, what could we have done and why didn't we do it during the 4 years Biden was in office and Democrats controlled Congress to prepare for the possibility of Trump winning a second term? Laws, executive orders, anything to reinforce whatever guardrails are left. Roger, sadly, the answer is almost nothing. Trump doesn't pay attention to laws. Trump doesn't pay attention to executive orders. Trump likes to knock down guardrails. The idea that the Democrats could have passed certain protective measures and Trump would have heeded them, I just think is just naive. And I appreciate the question, but I really don't think you could have done anything.
So I want to talk to Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Alito, Justice Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Gorsuch. I might be forgetting one. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. A Democrat is going to be elected in 2028. You know that. I know that. It's going to be a Democratic House. It's going to be a Democratic Senate. The Democratic president is going to announce a special transition advisory committee on the reform of the Supreme Court, that we could have our third branch of government has lost the faith and trust of American people. And his president would are going to do everything a lot. He's going to appoint a blue ribbon, maybe Judge Luttig and the dean of the, you know, just the usual fucking suspects, all right? And they're going to recommend that the number of Supreme Court justices go from 9 to 13. That's going to happen, people. That's going to happen to you. They're going to win. They're going to do some blue ribbon panel of distinguished jurists, and they are going to recommend 13, and a Democratic Senate and House are going to pass it, and the Democratic president is going to sign it because they have to do an intervention so we can have a Supreme Court that the American people trust again. So just keep that in the back of your mind. And I would bet a lot of money that that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
James, Donald in the Bay Area, and we're going to ask this question. Donald, next time, tell us where in the Bay Area. He said he was playing on chat GPT, and it said that the poor sentiment economy is demoralizing Republicans. Yeah, of course it is. And then he says, how do we help demoralize the GOP base further for the 2026 election? I just think it's, well, Mark Russell used to say during Watergate, it's just rip and read. You don't have to prepare much stuff.
I think they're pretty demoralized.
Yeah. No, you know, I do too. DKM, also from California, says, if Gavin Newsom is a Democratic nominee, for the sake of getting a win, what type of demographic candidates for VP should he select or avoid? I would bet in the next couple polls, Gavin Newsom is going to become the front runner. Well, that's interesting. It's a long time away. Just think of some of the other front runners, you know, like Jeb Bush and Bernie Sanders at one point, and Mario Cuomo and Rudy Giuliani. So it's a long way to go. But, you know, if Newsom should be the person they pick, he's got to pick someone of some balance. He'll be painted as a left-wing liberal. He's certainly walking away from some of that. Someone like an Andy Beshear or an Alyssa Slotkin would be great. But let's not quite nominate him yet, DKM.
You know, he's been very opportunistic in a way that Democrats like. He's a little better communicator. I take him on a little bit persuaded. I had dinner last night with D.D. Myers, who's very close to him, been pointed to any number of things. He's certainly one of the front runners, and he's a little more substantial than maybe I originally thought. And I've been kind of watching him.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think he's going to flame out or anything like that. Now he's, you know, and I think he's smart enough to know this. He's going to be running on a very fast track, and winnability is going to be a huge. And when I say huge, I mean it's going to be, unless there's some kind of massive recession that could be that. But if it's anything toward a mediocre economy, I just like Trump. Don't kid yourself. This the big. This race was not the big winner. Was Mondomino. The big winner was Spanberger, Sherrill. The big winner was this. It was one staggering fact in this election, and it was the giant loser. It was Trump. That's what this was all about. And when people come, it's going to be all about winnability. And people are going to say, and I'll be, hey, look, you represent a state that you can't lose. Why don't we go with a guy like from Kentucky that we lose by 20 and he wins by 5? And that will be a convincing argument. I never believed in process arguments, you know, anything like that. Process is going to play a big role in the 2028 nominating process.
Well, one advantage that Newsom has, and I think 2.5 years out, it's always perilous, just look at history, is that he'll be free to do whatever. He won't be governor anymore, starting in 2027. I think that is actually liberating as a candidate. It gives him a lot of, he can travel around. So, but, you know, again, it's a long way off, and we'll just have to see what happens. Patrick in Eugene, Oregon, says, when the mainstream media reports on poverty, SNAP benefits, rent subsidies, and the like, they always show African Americans or Latino people. Politically, would it be more effective for the liberals to show poor whites also, who are disadvantaged and destitute and actually are the majority of the poor?
All right. I will take a little issue with that. The stories that I've read, and I understand in that may be true of TV, and I'm not, I never mind attacking the New York Times, but they've had some stories. I think the other entities too I've seen, maybe I don't want to single people out, I can't have that good a recall, and in two areas that were hurt the most. And a lot of red state voters, a lot of white voters are really, really hurt by this. And Trump's so stupid, he points out that only Democrats get food stamps. That is demonstrably not true. And the reason I know it's not true is because I read the mainstream media. And yeah. I don't always defend them. I think some of their coverage can be mindless. But on this issue, our good friend here from Eugene got a point. You got to look a little bit deeper, and they actually have covered this.
Yeah, I agree. Taylor in Chico, California, ask, what do you think of Kevin Roberts' decision? Kevin Roberts is the head of the Heritage Foundation, not to distance Heritage from Tucker Carlson following his recent softball interview with Nick Fuentes, who was a vicious anti-Semite. He's actually pro-Nazi in many ways. Said Hitler doesn't really bother him. Here's the problem, Taylor, for Kevin Roberts and the those Republicans. Those hate mongers, those neo-Nazis, they're part of the coalition. They really are. And, it's outrageous, but I am particularly, I guess, incensed by the fact that Trump and his people have made such a big deal of anti-Semitism on college campuses, which clearly has been a problem. And then they go and they have the head of the most important foundation supporting them say, I'm not going to get upset about Tucker Carlson interviewing a man who says Hitler really wasn't all that bad. That's just where they are.
Well, when Donald Trump, who do you have for dinner?
He had dinner with him, I think, Fuentes, didn't he?
And Yee.
Yeah.
I have to say this. We all must say, anti-Semitism on campus is a big problem. Our friend Jill Abramson, who taught at Harvard, who is Jewish and did serious outreach to Jewish students, and she said none of them felt threatened. Now, that I know she said. I'm not saying there's no anti-Semitism on campus, but I never would suggest that.
She said, I'm sorry, James, I missed it. She said
talked to Jewish students at Harvard. This was back in the kind of middle of the whole thing, and I remember her saying they didn't feel threatened.
Yeah.
All right. But it's, and now they're all split and crazed, and it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse. What about this chat they had with Asana, what's this guy in Long Island? And in these chats, and they said, oh, it's just a bunch of kids. It was like people in their 40s. It was all these right wingers, and it was the most racist anti-Semitic shit you can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to have, Bill Ackman, maybe the Big Bella guy. He's not giving any more money to Columbia, whatever he does.
Harvard's brains.
Right. But meanwhile, all this shit's going on.
All right, James, our final question, and it is a good one. Jim in Eastern Maryland says, okay. James, do not burn your LSU diplomas. keep them as a reminder of what LSU used to be, and let those documents continue to fuel your desire to turn the institution around. And now that Brian Kelly has been fired as the LSU football coach, he adds as a PS, can he now drop his fake Southern accent?
Okay, this is a good. But first of all, if there was a Higher Education Administration Hall of Fame, I don't have any doubt that Mark Emmert and Bill Tate would be in it. I mean, Mark Emmert went to left to be the president of the NCAA, and Bill was run out by Jeff Landry and is now the president of Rutgers University, which is a very, very good university with a lot of different professional schools. It's ranked number 41 in the whole country by the U.S. News. I'm not much of a credentialist, but I guess you got to use some reference point. And we've now hired the president of McNeese State University in Lake Charles. All right, it is ranked 80th among Southern regional universities. And there's no such tort. I've looked at it to see if there's such a tort as a devaluation of the worth of a degree. I have 2 degrees in LSU. My oldest daughter has a graduate degree. My youngest daughter has an undergraduate degree. I'm in the LSU Hall of Distinction. I'm in the Manship School Hall of Fame. My dad and all of his siblings went. Myself and five of my siblings went to LSU. I think I have 20-something nieces and nephews. And it is a utter disgrace what they have done to that university. It is just a disgrace. It's a race toward mediocrity. I think that Jeff Landry would be happy if they made us a JUCO college. But you're right, something is going to change here because, and I asked myself the same question, I asked it to you, Albert. If John Bell was governor and he said, I'm going to let Barack Obama hire the basketball coach, I would be equally outraged. Of course, he wouldn't do that. He would never do that. So I don't have to worry about that problem. But your question is spot on. It's another disgrace that they are intentionally trying to dismantle the university. And by the way, it succeeded.
Well, listen, we love your questions. Please keep them coming. If we didn't get to it this week, send it again. We'll try to get to it next week. Tell us where you're from. And we really, really, really appreciate every question we get. Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Now, following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Naked Wines and Green Chef, in our episode show notes. We deeply thank you for supporting them because when you do, you help make this podcast happen. So to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Now remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.